This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In Massachusetts, construction workers die of opioid overdoses at 6 times the rate of other workers. Fishermen are 5 times more likely to fatally overdose. That's according to a report out today from the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. And with me now to go through the results of the report is WBUR's Martha Biebinger. Hello, Martha.
Hi, Meghna.
So these sound like some incredible numbers. Break them down for us. What are the biggest findings here?
Well, let's start by noting, Meghna, that it varies by gender for 2 reasons. More men die after an overdose in general in Massachusetts, and that holds true in the workforce. And also, men and women dominate different industries. So for men, as you said, the opioid overdose death rates are higher among construction, fishing, farming, forestry jobs. And for women, the report highlights healthcare support work and food services.
Interesting. So then why are these particular industries seeing these higher rates?
Well, these jobs are typically lower paid. So the vast majority of the people who died in these reports earned less than $50,000 and many less than $30,000. So those are jobs where there's very little paid sick time. There's little job security, but there are also high rates of injury. So imagine somebody pouring concrete or lifting your grandmother out of a bed. They strain their back. They get a prescription for an opioid, say Vicodin or OxyContin, and they try to numb the pain so they can keep working because they don't have any paid sick time. If the injury doesn't heal, they may become dependent on that pain medication. And in the worst case scenario, they end up addicted and in a fatal overdose. Now, the report doesn't prove each of those connections, but Massachusetts is the first public health agency to report on them and to suggest that they need to continue the analysis and make sure that those links are what's causing the problem.
Right. Okay. So given that possibility of links, you know, what about anything? What about the construction or the fishing industries in particular, especially on the side for men? Is there anything about the industries themselves that put men at greater risk?
Yes. We'll hear a little bit more about that from Brian Doherty, I think, in just a few minutes, right, Meghna?
Yep, yeah. Yep.
And then on the fishing side, here's J.G. Bartlett. He's president of the Fishing Partnership Support Services.
Ambulances don't go where fishermen fish. And it's only been very recently that the Coast Guard has been allowed to carry Narcan, which reverses opioid overdoses.
So you can imagine, like, that's the death rate right there. If somebody's in recovery out there on one of those fishing boats, the medications that you need to treat an addiction are buprenorphine and methadone typically, and you often have to start those by going to a clinic every day. How are you going to do that?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of ways that people have a hard time getting away from construction jobs to do those daily checkups with a doctor, or maybe get their urine screens that are needed, the counseling that's needed to go along with that. So there are challenges for blue-collar workers that are just different and maybe make treatment more difficult than they do in many white-collar jobs.
Right. Interesting. So, Martha, you said that this is the first time that the Department of Public Health has done an analysis like this by industry. Why did they want to do that?
Not just the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, Meghna. They say that it's the first time a public health agency in the U.S. has
anywhere.
Done it.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was a report out of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Some independent journalists have tried to look at this, but we're just starting to break down opioid overdose deaths by industry. And Massachusetts said it's important to do because they want to understand what can be done to help prevent this. And it may vary sector by sector. So, for example, the fishing partnership we just heard from J.J. Bartlett, they're starting to include ergonomic training, teaching you how to stretch before work in their first aid and other CPR.
To prevent injuries that could lead to that series of events you were talking about.
Exactly. Okay. And making sure that people have health insurance so they're getting routine checkups and small things don't turn into something larger that has to be treated with long-term pain medication. The report also says it's important to look at prescribing rates for these injuries. So they have the workers' comp claim data that shows how often people are prescribed opioids. And those rates have dropped, but Massachusetts is still the 5th highest among 26 states they looked at for the dosage that people are given during workers' comp claims.
Interesting. So what does DPH then want to do next with these results?
Well, they're going to work with the CDC on some additional research, that connection that we were talking about earlier. They want to have some stakeholder meetings within these various sectors to figure out what could be done to prevent or assist. Maybe there are some changes in work-related injury rules that would help. And they're going to be meeting with the Fish Partnership and other groups on intervention strategies to try to curb this misuse of opioids that seems to be leading to addiction and deaths.
Well, that's WBUR's Martha Biebinger. Martha, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Meghna.
All right. Well, as you heard Martha say, construction workers in Massachusetts have suffered the heaviest losses or the highest rate of deaths from opioid overdoses versus other workers in the state. Workers in the construction and mining industries made up some 24% of all opioid overdose deaths in Massachusetts between 2011 and 2015, for amongst workers, I should say. So joining me now is Brian Doherty. He's a general agent at the Building and Construction Trades Council of the Metro District of Greater Boston. They represent 20 local construction unions. Brian Doherty, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you very much for having me.
It's good to have you. First of all, let me just ask you, I mean, have you seen firsthand or amongst your colleagues sort of the effects of what Martha was talking about these higher rates of challenges with opioids and even deaths amongst construction workers?
Yes, we've been seeing it. And that's why when we had the opportunity, we immediately jumped on to help with this research, share best practices, and figure out ways that we can get better at providing the treatment that so much needed by folks experiencing these difficulties.
So tell me more about that. What have you done?
So the building trades unions have had a drug-free workplace. We follow the federal Drug-Free Workplace Act for over 30 years. And what that means, and for a long time, that meant let's make sure that folks aren't using, misusing, or abusing drugs on site. And that was a bit of a preventative measure and sometimes a punitive measure. And for the past, I mean, for decades now, we have taken a more empathetic and compassionate approach, which is this has to be about treatment. This has to be about making sure if workers are experiencing any type of use, misuse, or abuse with any type of dependency on drugs, we have to make sure they have every ability to get back to healthy. So what we want to make sure that is very much communicated today is this has to be figuring out how do we help that person who might be experiencing a difficult time, giving them everything they need, whether it's through our medical our medical funds or our training funds or our health and welfare funds to get the treatment they need to get back to healthy.
Yeah. Can I just ask you, though, I mean, because you heard Martha say a little earlier that there may be just some real significant structural challenges in the nature of the work itself. I mean, I imagine if a construction worker is on a job site, depending on where that job site is, he or she, it might be hard for them to go back and forth between the site and the place where they might need to get treatment. That things like that, that there are needs that the job has that may make it more difficult to get treatment. Is there anything that can be done there?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. I think, so we've known this for a long time. Construction is a very dangerous, very difficult job. It is done in all elements of the weather. It is done at extreme heights and temperatures and, again, very difficult work. So it is inherently an industry that at times has unsafe, potentially unsafe situations. So what we've done is we've partnered with all of our healthcare providers and all of our ergonomics experts to figure out what are the safest ways to do this work. And again, just so we understand here, Martha, like this is a 100,000 people in Massachusetts. The building trades union represents about 100,000 workers in construction and their entire families, in the sense that we spend over $1 billion on healthcare a year to make sure each worker has the training, the resources, the measures necessary to take on these challenges, to train away so that they aren't in unsafe circumstances, and if an injury or something happens where they might now be in a place where they need some help, that they have every ability to get that help through our modern assistance training programs, our member employee assistance training programs, just to make sure they have the help they need.
Mm. Now, some of the jobs that the report looked at had workers that were earning, less than $50,000 or less. Some of those workers were in construction. And I wonder if there's also an issue of a lot of the jobs can be temporary or contract jobs and maybe don't always include paid sick time. Is that kind of a structural change that the industry overall might consider?
So this is a great question. So the glaring, what we immediately identified in this report was that unionized construction workers had a far better chance of getting back to healthy in a realistic timeline. They also had a much better chance of not being in a situation where they needed as much help because of the training that goes into it, because of the resources around them if they are experiencing a difficult challenge. So the main takeaway for us was that on the organized side, and in Massachusetts we have a well-organized construction industry, but we are providing career pathways in the union construction industry to make sure that folks have everything they need for a long, healthy career to support themselves and their families. And the reason I touch on that is because this isn't, we have seen that this isn't a challenge or a public health crisis that discriminates based on socioeconomic backgrounds. This is a public health crisis that is affecting everyone. And the reason we want to step in here is because we've identified some best practices that help. And those best practices are family-sustaining wages, they are health care benefits for the entire family, they are retirement benefits so that worker, after a long, difficult career, has a chance to retire with some dignity. So, yeah, I think that if we can either organize the rest of the industry and provide these union protections to everyone, or figure out ways that we are using these best practices to share them with all workers, that's the best way to handle this, to make sure that they have a complete loop of health, whether they're on the job, off the job, if they have any challenges in front of them. They need the services that should be provided to them, and that's what unions represent here in Massachusetts.
Well, Brian Doherty is a general agent at the Boston Building and Construction Trades Council. They represent some 20 local construction unions. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, really appreciate your time. Thanks for taking on this important conversation.